Okay, Parshas Vayishlach begins, of course, with Yaakov Avinu's impending visit with Esav, his encounter with Esav. So Yaakov begins with his famous statement, Koso Mun Ladoni LeEsav. He tells the Malachim, this is what I want you to tell Esav, Ko Amar La'avdecha Yaakov, I have told, so says your servant Yaakov, Im Lavan Garti, I live with Lavan. And Rashi adds the famous comment that while at Lavan's, Tayag Mitzvos Shamarti, that Yaakov Avinu also kept the Tayag Mitzvos and did not learn from Lavan's actions. So the question has to be raised, what exactly does Rashi add by noting that Tayag Mitzvos Shamarti, Velo Lamadati Mimasav Haroim, that I didn't learn from his evil ways? Of course not. If you've kept a Tayag Mitzvos, you didn't learn from his evil ways. So Rav Dan Segel Shalita explains that when we learn that one can keep Tariag Mitzvos and still be a Rasha. That is to say, by declaring that Yaakov Avinu went in the right direction of observing Mitzvos, and still managed to remain on course for dealing with an ideal lifestyle within the boundaries of Torah, and also focused on Torah, Avodah, and Gemilas Chesed, that's how Yaakov Avinu was showing that it takes more than just a commitment to doing the Mitzvos, in order for a person to be a full-fledged Tayag Mitzvos Shamarti. There's an issue of keeping the Tayag Mitzvos, there's an inyan and a principle of keeping the spirit of the law as well, so suggests Rav Dan Segel, based on Yaakov Avinu's declaration to Esav. Anyway, at that moment in time, the Malachim come back and they say that Esav is coming with 400 men, the Arba Meos Ish Imo, that there were 400 men coming with him, Imo. And later, when Yaakov gets nervous, vayirah Yaakov vayemeod vayetzer lo, when Yaakov was distressed, the Torah says that he was distressed, he divided vayachat tzaam asher ito, the camp that was with him. So the question has to be raised, why is it when it's with Esav, the phrase with him is written in the Hebrew form, imo, and when it's Yaakov Avinu, it's ito. So Rav Isaac Uzban Shalita, the famous River del Rosh Hashiva, quotes the Vilna Gaon, who noted that there is a fundamental difference between Imo and Ito. Imo denotes a coming together in action as well as in mind. Ito, on the other hand, denotes coming together merely for a single action. And Rav Osban built on that idea over here by explaining that when Esav's 400 men were coming, they came in like mind and action to kill Yaakov Avinu. They all wanted to plunder and murder Yaakov. Yaakov, on the other hand, was in like action with his camp. His camp, of course, made up of his sons. But Yaakov's sons were not on the same page with him. For while Yaakov Avinu was afraid, the Shifteka believed and knew that they were going to be saved from Esav, and that they were destined to do so. And so therefore, Yaakov allowed the camp that was Ito to be divided, but that camp was already divided in its mindset with those who were with Yaakov, firmer believers than Yaakov himself. And the Torah continues with that idea by noting, Vayira Yaakov ma'od vayetzer lo, that Yaakov was afraid and he was distressed. Now, Rav Avadia Yosef Zecher Tzadik Levracha in Tavshin Ayin noted that in last week's parsha we learned how strong and smart Yaakov Avinu truly was, how he could lift boulders that otherwise would have taken many other people, how he was so wise in order to be able to figure out how to outsmart Lavan. So why was he afraid of an approaching army? Why would he allow himself to fall prey to that sense of fear? And Rav Avadia explained that he was not afraid of the army. What he was afraid of was Rivka Imenu's Nevuah, Lama Eshkol Gam Shneichem Biyom Echad. Why should both of you die on the same day? Yaakov knew that he could defeat Esav, but he was afraid that the cost would be too much to bear, as it would ultimately cost him his own life. His big question was, is this encounter one that was worth it? Indeed, many of the commentaries point out that Yaakov Avinu should not have had such an encounter. What he should have done is gone straight home, and he should have not tried too hard to be Machanev Esav by telling him, yeah, here I am and here I'm coming. The question has to be raised as to why the encounter was necessary, and Rav Ovadia points out that Yaakov's fear was that not so much that he would be killed as much as the Nevuah of Lama Eshkol Gam Shneichem Yom Echad, which provides us once again with a deeper insight Into Rashi, who says that he was afraid Shema Yarog, Shema Yehareg, and Shema Yarog Achirim. It's not two separate ideas, it's one extended idea that if he kills Esav, he will also lose his life that very day. Anyway, so that night Yaakov Avinu takes his 11 sons and he crosses Mavar Yabok. And Rashi notes that Yaakov Avinu had Dina in the box. Now the truth of the matter is, why did he go to that extreme? Couldn't he have just dressed her shabbily and not allowed her to dress herself up? Why put her in a box? So Moriv Rabbi Rav Shachta pointed out that putting her into the box was an act of being overly cautious. And so therefore, Yaakov Avinu was punished with the episode that took place in Shechem. Rav Shachta used to cite this as a proof that parents should sometimes develop some degree of openness with their children. If we're too strong with the children and overly forbid, then children are going to rebel. Rav Shechter added that a similar scenario is found at the beginning of the Parsha, where the Medrash condemns Yaakov for confronting Esav with the gift. He didn't need a gift because the gift alerted Esav to Yaakov's presence. He should have simply come back and not been overly cautious. He should have ignored Esav, and Esav should have done the same thing. And the same is true, Bizman HaZeh, in our time, when we deal with Medinas Yisrael, said Rav Shechter. We, Medinas Yisrael Jews in the land, need to strike a balance between reaching out to our neighbors and the idea of bowing down to the greater authorities. A similar concept, as I mentioned before, is pointed out by the Netziv at the beginning of the parasha. Anyway, the Torah continues, and the Torah mentions that when Esav and Yaakov actually confronted one another, Esav kissed Vayishakehu Vayivku. He kissed him, and they cried. And Rashi cites the Sifri that notes that it's a halacha yadua, it's a well-documented halacha, that Esav sonei liYaakov, that Esav hates Yaakov, but at this particular moment, his mercy was aroused, and so he kissed him fully. The Netziv adds that Yaakov too had his love aroused at this time, a love that otherwise is usually couched in a sense of caution and fear. Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, learns a critical lesson here. He notes that there are moments in history that there is a love between the individual descendants of Esav and Yaakov. Antoninus and Rebbe are a very good example. And at those moments, there are tears between them. But, says Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, do not take the tears as an indication of a change in the relationship, because the relationship is as clear as halacha itself. Esav ultimately hates Yaakov. Yaakov does not live with Esav in the end. Yaakov moves on to Sukkos, because that's the natural next stage in his life's mission. Sometimes we have to turn, and in a particular situation, we have a responsibility to turn around and say, it's time to move on. We have to develop that happy go lucky position, and with a certain sense of awareness of what that position means. The fact of the matter is, after this episode, we have the tragic story of Dina mentioned within the parasha in great detail. And the Torah tells us that the brothers were very upset. When they heard, they were Vayatzvu. Because a disgrace was done in Yaakov, and such a thing shall not be done. What a strange lashon of the pasuk, v'chein lo ye'aseh. What's gained by adding the words v'chein lo ye'aseh, that such a thing shall not be done? Isn't it obvious? And moreover, calling something a nevala, saying that it's a disgrace, makes it a very serious issue. And then turning around and minimizing it with the statement v'chein lo ye'aseh seems to mitigate the severity. So the late great Rav Yosef Chaim of Baghdad, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Ben Ish Chai, explains that had another injustice been done, then it could have been repaid ayin tachas ayin. That gives the person taking the revenge a place to mitigate anger somewhat. But in this particular case, the nevala can never, ever, ever be redone back. It just doesn't happen. And so therefore, v'chein lo ye'aseh is a statement back to the anger burning. The fact is, that anger does not allow any reciprocation. And so therefore, that creates a situation that leads not only to a anger but a sadness, not only to a sadness but an anger that can never dissipate over the period in time. Sometimes in life, we see such terrible avos in the world that we live in, such terrible issues that have been done, traumas that have been recreated, things that have been stolen, innocence that can never be done back. This not only is a situation that creates a sadness and a loss, but psychologically it creates an anger. Not only does it create a psychological anger, it creates a sadness and a loss. And so therefore, they went ahead and they plundered the city, Ashir Timu Esachusam, because they raped the sister. Now, since they did not destroy the women and children, why were Bnei Yaakov allowed to take the spoils of the city? Why didn't the women and children automatically inherit the spoils of the city? The Or HaChaim HaKadosh explains that Bnei Yaakov took the spoils of the city as a result of the fact that they were due, the dina was due, the meiboshes, the money for embarrassment. But isn't halachically the meiboshes supposed to come from the one who did the activity? Shouldn't that money therefore only have come from the coffers of the actual Shechem, the son of Hamor? Why then were the rest of the people of Shechem, the women and the children who were left alive, why were they not left with the coffers? So David Soloveitchik Shalita explains that when they killed Shechem, the people of Shechem jumped up to take arms to defend him. And instantly that matter turned to an issue of war. When an issue becomes an issue of a battle for war, the victor is entitled to the spoils. Kinevala Sabi Israel, and so therefore everyone lost, and the people of Shechem, the survivors, which survived, albeit penniless. Finally, the Haftorah deals with the entire book of Ovadia, the Chazon Ovadia. The Gemara in Sanhedrin asks why Ovadia was able to merit a nevuah, and the Yon Yaakov explains the Gemara's question. The Yon Yaakov explains that Shechina usually only rests on a person who is considered an usher. The Gemara in Nedarim is well known, where the Gemara says that Eina nevuah shora ella al chacham biyashir. So why is it, and Miuchas, other standards are put out as well. We also know that Ovadia HaNavi was not somebody who had money. After all, he's identified as the individual who had to borrow money in order to feed the Bnei HaNaviim in the times of Elisha. And so therefore the question has to be asked, how could it be that the same individual who was so dirt poor was zochet to the nevuah of Chazon Ovadia? The Yon Yaakov explains that there's a difference between being a Navi, that is to say a repeat Navi, who has more than one nevuah, who must meet all prophecy requirements, including having money, and then that of an individual who gets a single reward of prophecy, like the reward that was given to Ovadia for his defense of the 100 Nevi'im, which was a one-time event that didn't need all the requirements. The difference is fundamental. Whereas in the former case, the individual has to meet all the requirements because the Chalos Shem Navi, the title of forevermore Nevuah, is upon him, as opposed to the latter case where it's not so 100% clear. It's a gift and a promise given to an individual who overcame his financial challenges in order to benefit other Nevi'im as well. Sometimes in life we also have to do that. We have to step up to the plate, even though we have to step beyond what we think is our comfort zone, and to reach out and help those who are beyond us. If we're zocha to do so, and we're able to do so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewards us in kind, and gives us a chance to understand Him on a deeper level. And in that merit, the Ribono Shel Olam gives us a chance to achieve great things in our lives as well. Shabbat Shalom to all.